This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good Friday to you. Thanks for joining us. End of the week. All right, so there's two things that we do on Fridays during these NFL previews. Sometimes we have to go back and make up for a date. So we're going to do that today with the Carolina Panthers. And then we kind of review the division. And the NFC South is not the top division. The winner of this division is not going to win the Super Bowl. The winner of this division is very likely not going to the NFC title game, but you never know. But one of these teams is going to win the division and go to the playoffs and host a playoff game. So we're going to go through it because every single team, all four of them, are going to be starting the season with a different quarterback than they started the season last year. Now, there's only one team with a quarterback that was on the roster last year, and that is the Atlanta Falcons. Desmond Ridder started the last four games of the season, but everybody else is brand new, including a rookie Bryce Young with the Carolina Panthers. So we will talk about the Panthers today, a team that last year was all excited about this Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold battle, and now both of them are gone. Mayfield is in Tampa and Darnold in San Francisco. They've got a new head coach. They parted ways with the college guy, Matt Rhule. And Steve Wilks, I thought, did a pretty good job keeping him in the race, but in the end, it was Frank Reich, the former Indianapolis coach that had come in, is now in and becoming the new head coach of the team. Last night was the Hall of Fame game. Now, I said this yesterday, I'm not a big Hall of Fame game guy. I know that some of you will watch it or watched it because it's football. It is at this time where, yeah, we got really nothing much going else, you know, on. We're still 2 months away from Major League Baseball's playoffs. Everything else is sort of quiet. There is an NFL game on TV, and most people just watch it because they like seeing football action on their TV. I don't really care for the Hall of Fame game because of all the preseason games, it's the most meaningless, and there are a lot of meaningless preseason games. It is the most meaningless because nowhere, you don't do anything in that game. You are just doing it as part of a celebratory weekend of celebrating the men that are in the Hall of Fame. That being said, when you get to next week, then the interest pops up a little bit. You are going to start seeing coaches making evaluations, playing with starters a little bit, maybe a little more in preseason game number two, not at all, or maybe more in preseason game three, as coaches are now adjusting to the three-game preseason. But the Hall of Fame game is clearly the one where no one is going to play of any significance whatsoever, and last night was the case. Aaron Rodgers didn't play, Deshaun Watson didn't play, a number of Jets starters didn't play, a number of Browns starters didn't play, and in the end, it's a bunch of backups battling for a job, putting on a show. But there is one takeaway that people have from this game that I think it's worth noting, and that is that in one particular play, Zach Wilson threw a 57-yard pass. That was complete. And afterwards, Zach Taylor said that he credited Aaron Rodgers with that call and that particular play call. And people started saying, you know what? If I'm going to take anything from this game, if I need a talking point, if I need an angle for a worthless preseason game, it's going to be this. That possibly Aaron Rodgers arriving in New York is the best thing that ever happened to Zach Wilson. As if the football world ever cared about the mental status of Zach Wilson in the first place. But that's pretty much the takeaway. That Aaron Rodgers being that veteran presence has now taken the burden of being the starting quarterback for the Jets off of the shoulders of Zach Wilson, the young man who's drafted and was the king of the city for a little bit until he wasn't the king of the city anymore. And that there is a way for Zach Wilson to sort of redeem himself a little bit and come back and become a stronger, more mature football player after a couple of years sitting behind Aaron Rodgers. Now, we know Rodgers isn't going to be a Jet forever, quite possibly 2 years, maybe three if he squeezes one in, but it's likely two. Right, he's going to be 40, he'll be 41. It's likely two. And that means Zach Wilson, who's still a young man, can take over the Jets again if the Jets so see fit, as a more mature, experienced player learning from the best. Now, this I find very interesting, and I find it a very interesting angle. Does Aaron Rodgers have anything to lose by grooming and making better Zach Wilson? Absolutely not. Zach Wilson is never going to be in a quarterback battle with Aaron Rodgers, no matter how long Aaron Rodgers stays. In fact, the reason Aaron Rodgers is there, and he knows it, is because Zach Wilson was a failing starting quarterback. That's basically how it works. The Jets drafted him, the number two pick overall. He has failed. The Jets have not been good since he became the starting quarterback. They weren't good before. They're still not good. And now Aaron Rodgers comes in because of that situation. So Rodgers, I'm sure, has no problems helping Zach Wilson with his career because Rodgers is getting a new life. He's getting a rebirth. He's almost doing what Tom Brady did. Getting out of the sort of shackles of Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, you saw Tom Brady more kind of energized at his older age, right? More excited about the game because he was a new place to go. He was with a new team, a new coaching staff. Yeah, he brought Gronk and everything, you know, but still, it was new players surrounding him. And here was the key. There was a new appreciation. Right? Brady had done all of these things in New England for 20 years, and the fan base loved him. But everyone was kind of going, well, is it Belichick? Is it Brady? Let's write a book about it. Let's analyze this. When you're a quarterback that's gone to, you know, 9 Super Bowls in New England, winning 6 titles for that team, you don't want a conversation about whether or not it was you or the head coach. You kind of want to know it's you. And Brady goes to Tampa, and he wins the Super Bowl, and it's just, you could see the joy on his face. Not that saying that his memories in New England were bad, but you can see that there was some level of, there was another group of people that were appreciating him for the first time. And that's what Aaron Rodgers is getting. You hear people talk about this in relationships. That they date somebody for a period of time, a couple of years, and then it gets stale and they break up, and then they get a new boyfriend or they get a new girlfriend, and they're energized and they look younger and they're exciting and they talk about hobbies they've never talked about before. Like all of a sudden they're into hiking, right? They never were into hiking before. They were never into outdoor stuff, but the new relationship kicks in and now they're into all of this stuff. And that's where Aaron Rodgers is. The comment people are making about the growth of Zach Wilson has nothing to do with Zach Wilson. They don't care about Zach Wilson. There isn't a Jets fan that's looking forward to a new, older, mature Zach Wilson taking over the team when Aaron Rodgers retires. No, this is a statement on Aaron Rodgers. This is a statement on Aaron Rodgers doing something he couldn't do in Green Bay. Now, I use the word couldn't. Because some people say wouldn't. He didn't do any growth with Jordan Love whatsoever. Why? Well, it's obvious. They drafted Jordan Love to take over the job that Aaron Rodgers wanted to keep. That's not the case in New York. He can grow Zach Wilson. He can improve Zach Wilson. He can watch him develop because he's not a threat to him. But the Green Bay Packers drafted a quarterback in the first round to take that job over because back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Are you retiring? Do you want to go somewhere else? We're not sure about you. You're not sure about us. And all of a sudden, there's a new guy in town. And Rodgers was once that new guy in town, and he knew what it was like when he wasn't embraced by Brett Favre. So again, all of the stuff that you're hearing about, well, if there's one takeaway from this game, it is that Zach Wilson looks like he's a little bit more mature and comfortable behind Aaron Rodgers. And man, I'm excited to see it. Stop it. Stop it. This is more about what the Jets are getting from Aaron Rodgers. Are they getting a teacher now? Are they getting a teammate that is now filled with so much passion for his new team that he's going to try to make everyone around him better in a way that maybe he didn't do at Green Bay in the backup quarterback situation with Jordan Love? It's the only thing that I took away from that, from the analysis of the Hall of Fame game. Now, as I said all week and in last week too, that when we got to this game, there will be some of you out there that watched it because yesterday was really the start of football season. Once you see a preseason game on TV, you know that you're getting football in some way, shape, or form every weekend from now until the Super Bowl, except for that week we're off. And even then, you'll get Pro Bowl festivities. But that's how some people view the Hall of Fame game. It's really the start of football. I said some people think it's training camp. Some people need it to be the start of the regular season. Some people think it's week zero in college football. It all depends. Everyone's different. But last night's meaningless game that's just part of the celebratory weekend in Canton, Ohio, 9 new members will be inducted this weekend. People need to draw on something. And what people drew on was more about what kind of new attitude that Aaron Rodgers has around the Jets than Zach Wilson. I'm not saying Zach Wilson doesn't deserve some love and appreciation. We're all human beings. We all kind of need it. I'm not going to throw him out with the trash. He's young. He was put in a really awful situation, but he didn't do himself any favors. He wasn't a good quarterback, and this is the world where you got to be good, and sometimes you got to be good out of the gate. I'm a big proponent of if you draft a guy and he's the guy, let him take over the job as soon as possible. But in Zach Wilson's case, clearly it didn't work. If there's one example, or there's a bunch of examples of it not working. But when you're on a bad team, you do put your quarterback in a bad spot of having to do good things when the team is awful. But when they surrounded him with talent last year, he still couldn't do anything. And that, to me, is more of, thank God Aaron Rodgers is here, not to help us be a Super Bowl champion, but giving us a quarterback that we feel like we've deserved for all of these years when we've put up with the Mark Sanchez's of the world, who then get some playoff wins. Mark Sanchez, AFC title game, twice, but still no Super Bowl. But we put up with Sam Darnold and Zach Wilson now. We want a quarterback we know has already been through the ringer. He's already been through the ups and downs of an NFL season. He's won some MVPs. He's won a Super Bowl. He's a legitimate first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best ever. But what you get besides that is you get to see a guy that is excited and energized by his new opportunity. Helping Zach Wilson is a small example of that the Jets might get for the rest of the season. All right. More college football realignment news coming. That's next as we continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Good Friday to you as we roll along. And again, finishing up the NFC South. What division are we doing next week? Do you know yet? Or
no, decided? I don't know. I have a wheel at home that I spin.
That's good. I like
and
that.
And so I haven't had the chance to spin the wheel because, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit I've been jet lagged all week.
That sound means we're running out of time. I'm going to give one wheel a final spin. Vowels worth nothing. Consonants worth. AFC North. There you go.
It might be. I mean, truthfully, I was saving some of the more fun divisions for when I was here.
Yeah.
It's quite, kind of why I got rid of the Souths so quickly.
The Souths are not fun.
Nah.
The Souths are not fun. It's like a, you know, an obligation that we have to make sure we cover every single team in every single division. But these divisions are not very pop exciting.
No, I mean, AFC South, I mean, if Jacksonville doesn't win it, then something really bad happened this year.
That's right. I agree. I'm not sold on the Titans being healthy and competitive. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars have gotten the taste of what they were always looking for, and now will win that
game. Yeah, no, I think the Titans will finish second.
Yep, I do too.
And with the NFC South, I mean, that literally is throwing a dart at a dartboard.
I was thinking about
this. Which team is it going to land on?
If I'm looking at the Saints going, I guess because Derek Carr, but I got nothing else.
But I don't. I mean, are you fully behind Derek Carr?
Not really.
I mean, why can't Baker Mayfield just step
That's
up?
That's what
play?
I think. I think Baker Mayfield. I think the Buccaneers have too many holes. There's a lot of things
too.
Wrong with that team. I mean, it's not, and they lost a lot of people. A lot of people jettisoned from that team.
Yep. And Desmond Ritter, I mean, I like the Falcons' look. I just don't think it's this year.
No, I don't think it's this year either.
I think you got to give them another year or two, get these young kids a little more playing time, a little more NFL experience. They'll probably be great towards the end of the season.
Might be, when they get a little bit more seasoning.
Mm-hmm. I can
see Bijan Robinson is like outstanding. That could be fun.
But I can see them being like that disruptive team at the end of the season. Like you hit the month of December and you're like, I don't want to play the Falcons.
And then Carolina just with the rookie quarterback. I can't imagine them winning 9 games or 8 games.
Who was the last rookie quarterback that really made an impact?
Yeah.
Like, really took the team to the playoffs.
Could say Mac Jones because he did go to the playoffs with the Patriots his rookie season. But
is that more Belichick?
It wasn't,
is that more the defense?
Right. Well, If we're gonna do that, then it would be literally every rookie quarterback. Right?
True.
See, I think it's hard. And don't get me wrong. Carolina was not the worst team in the NFL. They moved up to get the number one pick, but they certainly were 7-10. I mean, but if you're a bad team and you have a rookie quarterback, it's almost impossible to imagine that you turn into a legitimately good playoff team. It's more likely than not you're going to continue to not be good as your quarterback develops, because that's how you got him in the first place.
But it does help your situation when you have a division like the Panthers have.
That's right. That's
right. So, I mean, it's conceivable that they do win the division just because the other three teams aren't that great.
That's right. And again, somebody's hosting a playoff game. One of these four teams is hosting a playoff game. So
probably with a losing record.
I'm in a quandary here, okay? And the quandary is this. I want to cover some big news in sports. And sometimes the big news in sports isn't the X's and O's. Some of it is the business of sports that can get your brain muddled, right? And we spend a lot of time on this conference realignment stuff in college football because it matters. It really is a big deal. We are seeing a seismic change in the way college football is going to be played, not from a standpoint of how you root for your team, but in what context are you rooting for your team? Are there more teams in your conference now? Are the landmines bigger to get to where you want to go in college football? We're expanding the playoff. We're getting rid of divisions in these conferences. We are now seeing the morphing of super conferences as one conference that had been around a very long time is starting to disappear before our eyes. Yesterday, we had Pete Futek on to talk about the Pac-12 and the problems with the Pac-12. USC and UCLA are leaving, right? They are going to the Big Ten. Colorado is jettisoning for the Big 12, and that has left every team that is left wondering what's going to happen. And we told you that Arizona and Arizona State could be the next to leave. And now it looks like Arizona could be heading to the Big 12. Arizona has gotten an invitation from the Big 12. The conference met yesterday, approved the application for the Wildcats to join the league. There could be a trickle effect bringing in Arizona State. The two are kind of connected. They're rivals, but in the business world, they're connected. They share a board of regents, and the two could be going together because there's a desire among people to keep the two together so that their rivalry can stay together. They don't want what happened to Oklahoma and Oklahoma State to happen here. They don't want one of those two state schools to be off playing in one conference, the other one staying playing in another, and they can't play every single year in the rivalry, or they won't play every year in the rivalry based on their new commitments to the conference. That being said, this would be another death blow to the Pac-12. We talked about this yesterday. Their media rights deal is not good. It's streaming. It's Apple. It's the new way we will be consuming sports, but it's not an immediate check. It's not a media company coming in and saying, "Hey, you know what? We want to buy this for X amount of millions of dollars, and that means everybody gets a cut of this, and here's your check. You don't have to do anything." The way their streaming deal with Apple is projected to work is that the schools would get a cut of their subscription that they get from their fan base. So if you've got people in Oregon all signing up for Apple TV to get Oregon games, Oregon gets a cut of every subscription that comes in, right? And I'm sure it's going to be something people will fill out to show that they support this school or whatever, but that's how that will work. And some schools will be at a disadvantage to that because, one, their enrollment is low enough, so their alumni base is not as large as others. And, two, they don't play good enough football to warrant the casual fan to buy Apple TV, to buy their subscriptions. And who gets the money? Like, if I buy it, like, if I have Apple TV, but so let's say I didn't. And let's say I just want to have Pac-12 football. I don't live in the area. I didn't go to any of the schools. I don't root for any of the schools. I just want it. Who would get the money then? So it's still a little complex, but what it isn't is a big check right away. Nobody even knows how much would come in from a situation like that. So Arizona could be on the way out. And I believe that Arizona State would then follow. And it means that the Pac-12 that has been around for a long time, and Arizona and Arizona State, they were part of the Western Athletic Conference, moved to the Pac-12 in the late 70s, 1976. They've been there for, you know, close to 50 years. They've been a part of that. It's really now a sign that I don't know how that conference survives now. I don't know where they go. I mean, it's San Diego State's not going to make up for the loss of two Arizona schools, especially Phoenix, the Phoenix market, and Colorado, the Denver market. I don't think there's a survivability here. You can pluck Boise State, you can pluck Las Vegas, but it's not going to work.
Can Northern Arizona take over?
Yeah, can Northern Arizona take over?
the Lumberjacks of Northern Arizona?
Good point. Where do you go?
Seriously, where do you go? The Pac-12 is dead.
It's dead.
I saw one reporter, Pac-12 reporter, saying that we'll know about their future in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Yep, that's right.
So by Monday, we'll know what's up with the Pac-12 because, their media rights deal dies today?
Yep.
Ends today.
Utah is also on the block to possibly move.
They're gone.
Utah. If think about Utah. You know how bad they want the Holy War back with BYU? This would be perfect.
Yeah.
They could go right back into that conference and have that rivalry.
And you don't think the Big 12 would take them?
Sure, of
course.
They
have open arms taking them in there.
Salt Lake City, join up. Come on in.
Yeah.
Come on in.
It's a big enough media market that they say, sure, we'll take that one.
But it really is amazing to me that you have two conferences that handled their quote unquote demise completely differently, right? Big 12 said, you know what? We'll figure out other schools with market size to make our media rights deal very attractive. Even if we lose two teams that are huge in college athletics, especially football. Huge programs. We will still be able to figure out a way. There's enough schools in these cities that are playing in non-Power 5 conferences. They'll be willing to come in and join us. And that's what they did. They found Cincinnati. They got Houston. They got Central Florida. They got BYU. Now, they got Colorado now. They're looking at getting Arizona. They're looking at getting Utah. Arizona State could join Arizona as part of the two-school state that goes to this conference. Poor Pac-12. They didn't get their media rights deal done. They did not secure USC and UCLA enough, and now it's dead.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right! Thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. By the way, Shohei Ohtani hit a home run last night.
Ridiculous.
He left the game after four innings on the mound with cramps in his hand, but was like, nah, I may not be able to pitch anymore, but I can hit.
I can still swing a bat.
I can swing a bat. And so he stayed in the lineup and he hit a home run. They did lose. But
he went 2 for 2 as
yep.
well.
It's Shohei.
I don't know what to make of him.
I don't either. It's crazy.
It's fun.
I kind of hope he flirts with 62. He doesn't really have to get it, but I would love to see it. 2 months.
He's at 40.
He's at 40. He needs 22 home runs and
yeah.
What, 8 weeks? Whatever.
That's doable.
Eight, nine weeks.
I think even getting to 50 is remarkable.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Especially after when Aaron Judge got the only reason Aaron Judge got the MVP is because he hit 62 home
Yeah.
Run.
But him getting 50 and, you know, pitching the way he does, that's just, you know, if he doesn't get Cy Young and MVP, well, I guess Cy Young he's still on the fence for, right?
Yeah, there are pitchers with better records,
yeah.
They still do the AL-NL Cy Young Award, but Shane McClanahan of the Tampa Bay Rays is like 11-1,
right?
Something like that.
If he doesn't get MVP,
but he absolutely should get MVP.
I mean, he should be walking away with it right now.
I was going to say Spencer Strider has more strikeouts, but he plays for the Braves, so he could be in the running for
NL.
The NL Cy Young, so that wouldn't matter whatsoever. But yeah, like Zach Eflin of the Braves has got 12 wins and whatnot, but Shohei Ohtani would be considered, you know. And Garrett Cole is like an ERA of 2.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But the Yankees stink.
Exactly right. I'm looking up the Angels right now. So they are 56 and 54. So that means they're 110 games that they have played. They're already locked in. They have 110. So they have 52 games remaining. And he needs to hit 22 home runs to tie the record. That's a tough thing to do. But, you know, who knows? If you get on a tear and you hit 5 in 7 days or something like that.
You get a couple of these, you know, 2 home run nights that he's had.
Yeah, you can do that.
Just chip away at it. You might see
But the sad part is, this is the sad part for the Angels. So last week they go, Shohei is not being traded. We are all in. And then they make a trade. They get Lucas Giolito from the White Sox. And then they go out and they get Randall Grichuk and CJ Krohn from the Rockies. They're all in. They're making some moves at the trade deadline. And since the trade deadline, which was on Tuesday night, they're 0-3. So they're falling backwards in the race for the wild card spot in the American League. So I don't know. Yeah. Enjoy the ride of Shohei Ohtani for the next 2 months, because not going to be here much longer. I think Shohei is probably out the door.
No, he's gone.
Winter.
He's
Bye.
Gone.
Thanks for everything. Appreciate the love, but I think I'm going to the other LA team.
Thanks for bringing me to America.
I'm going somewhere else. But I, you know what? I started thinking about the thing we talked about on Wednesday about his salary, like his upcoming salary. And how hard it would be for any player to reach the number that Shohei Ohtani is going to get this winter. And I really started wondering how the owners must be like, this is our natural salary cap. Like this will be the thing that will prevent us from going completely ballistic with any young talent that comes up the ranks. If we lock in Shohei at $500 million for 10 years, if somebody is willing to do that, then I know I will probably never have to go over $500 million on any one of my young superstars in the next decade plus. If I don't have a player that can pitch and strike out 200-plus people in a season and hit 50 home runs, I do not have to go near that number. Now, there might be an owner that goes, screw it, I'm paying a guy $550. I'm playing a guy $600. Okay, you can't stop these guys. They're all, you know. But in a non-salaried cap sport, this might be a natural salary cap where you just can go, you're not Shohei Ohtani. What can I tell you? You're awesome. You're a 3-time MVP, but you're not Shohei Ohtani. But I do. I will say the one thing that counters that argument is if everyone is on board with that, then it works in all of the owners' favors. But if you fear that a team might want, let's say you got a kid who's 18 now, and by the time he's 25, he's a monster at the plate. You might have a team go, I don't care. I got to have him. I'm going to take him away from you. And if it means $550, I'll take $550. If it's $575, I'll pay him $575. That's the only counter to that. But it does allow the owners to go, you're not a unicorn, son. What can I do for you? We'll talk $450. We'll talk $475, but we ain't going near that number. As long as he has that number, that's it. I think the number could be six. If I was Shohei, I'd go six.
I think it has to be six.
I think it's got to be six.
Because I think, it's like that. The analogy that I keep using is that you're getting two players in one. And if you're only going to spend $500 million, then essentially what you're saying is like, all right, I'm paying $250 million for an elite pitcher and I'm paying $250 million for an elite batter.
Yeah, right, right.
And that's robbery.
That is, well, they're going to try to get it.
Oh, of course. If a team doesn't try to do it that way, try to get the most amount of money out of it, the deal.
I think you're right from the agent standpoint. I think that's what.
Yeah, you
got to
go in saying that and saying no. It's what would you pay for an elite pitcher? I think that's the mentality that an agent has to go in there with.
And say then, what would you pay for a home run hitting machine?
Yeah.
Well,
and he's doing himself some real favors. Man, I mean, you know, if he gets to 50 home runs, the agent's sitting back with his feet on the desk like, your guys are coming to me.
What is amazing also is that he's not just a home, he's batting .310. He's
yeah.
a .300 hitter, and he hits 40-plus home runs a season. Like, it's not just that he's not like your typical, when you think
he's
of your
Aaron
typical
Judge.
Home run slugger, right, he's not Aaron Judge. When you think of your home run
and...
slugger, what do you think of? What are the two things you think of when the guy goes to the plate? He either hits one out or he strikes out.
Yep.
Like, those are the two
Who's
things you think about.
The Philly? Ryan Howard.
Ryan Howard, yeah.
Yeah, led the team in home runs and strikeouts.
Yeah, so he's either doing one or the other. Like, Shohei Ohtani is batting .310. It's crazy. Right? So, yeah, it's going to be really fun this offseason. But he hit a home run last night, so he has the magical number of 40. That's a good number.
It's a big number.
Let's roll with it for the next 52 games and see what this young man can do to the end of the season. And by the way, what it looks like is there'll be an end of the season and an end of the Shohei Ohtani era at the end of these 52 games.
It doesn't look like
they're going to the playoffs, and it doesn't look like
the end of the Angel Shohei Ohtani era.
That's it. No more Anaheim Shohei.
That's why I have to believe that some of these teams who are making deals just for cash are planning for this offseason.
Great point.
And I think there's only maybe, four teams that really, truly are in the running for Shohei?
The Angels currently are four games back for the final wild card spot. There are three teams ahead of them now. Seattle is ahead of them, and the Yankees and the Red Sox. Toronto currently occupies that spot. So the Blue Jays occupy it, and the Angels are four back. I know there's 52 games left, but it's going to be hard. It is going to be hard.
Well, they don't have any pitching.
That's right.
That's always been their biggest issue, that they don't have the pitchers to sustain this. I mean, they got a great lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They certainly
when
do.
When everyone's healthy.
But... You're hoping Lucas Giolito adds to the rotation, but Griffin Canning and Patrick Sandoval are not going to be the guys.
Who?
That are going to be leading you to the promised land in Anaheim. Goodness. But yeah, no, that's good. Good last night. The Yankees beat the Astros last night. Domingo Germán is being treated for an alcohol problem.
Yeah.
That's what a wild season for him to have a perfect game and then being treated for alcohol rage.
Literally being benched.
Yeah, being benched.
And he got sent down. Did he get... He got sent down to the minors for a rehab assignment.
He did, and he blasted Aaron Boone, mm-hmm. right? He smashed something in the clubhouse. This guy, I mean, seriously, perfect game a month and a half ago.
Yep,
a little less than a month and a half ago. You do something 23 other people in the history of the sport have done. It's one of the rarest feats in sports.
So the memes were of. The one pitcher and bench warmers.
Yeah, right.
The old guy is like, when he's like, no, I'm 12. But him, but it was him on the mound, like, you know, in his glove, pulling up a bottle of alcohol, bottle of tequila.
Right.
Like, that's Domingo Germán.
That's Domingo Germán. I mean, seriously, it goes to show you a perfect game can come from anybody.
Yep.
It can come from anybody. This guy has an ERA near 5. He's 5-7. But yet one night, things were working perfectly against the A's. And he threw a no-hitter on June
20th. Who knows? Maybe the ball was speaking to him.
Maybe so. That's right. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Ron with two N's.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, continuing on a good Friday to you. Thanks for joining us. We continue. It is Wake Up Call. So, again, the Carolina Panthers. That is coming up in hour number 3. Sharon Thornsburn was joining us.
Thorsland
is joining us. And Glenn Davis from Soccer Matters is going to join us in hour 2.
Yeah.
As the Women's World Cup team is playing Sweden on a Sunday morning.
Got to get the expert opinion.
Yeah, we'll
expert
get a
analysis.
On what the heck's happening over there? Why they stink? Why are they bad? But so I'm hearing this. So I'm seeing more. I'm reading more and more analysis of this because, you know, I'm kind of new trying to learn the thing. So the Athletic had a really good detailed article on this. And they said, I didn't watch the game. 4 in the morning. Did you said you watched, you came back?
I came back. Yeah, it was Monday, Tuesday morning. I arrived at home. Was able to watch the entire second half. Because okay, it was so at the game. What, game time started about 2:30, 3 o'clock
in
the morning?
Yeah, it was in the middle of the night. So I want to ask you this. When sometimes in golf, right, we will see a golfer at a major, and he hits beautiful shots. He's got a – he'll hit a shot on the green, or he'll drive down the middle, but the putting doesn't work or something. Like, there's just something missing that prevents that person from winning the major championship. So the analysis of the Portugal game – was they had a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
They had a lot of shots. They were getting shots in the box. They were getting shots on goal. They just couldn't get it in the goal.
They weren't finishing it.
And yeah, they weren't finishing it. So does that mean, am I to take that away, that it's a good team that the ball's just not bouncing their way, or is this a bad team that should have finished and can't finish?
I lean more towards the latter on this, that it's – I don't think it's a bad team. I think they're a good team. They just are lacking, I don't want to say killer instinct, because they're getting the shots off, but it's like they're lacking that killer instinct that you know, it's like, no, I'm going to bury this in the back of the net. No questions asked. Don't worry about it. It's going in. You know, I mean, everyone celebrated Haran when she scored against the Netherlands.
Right.
Because, you know, she was kind of squabbling with one of her club teammates. And they, you know, they were like, you know, kind of pushing, shoving, not really, you know, raising hands to each other, but just using their bodies to kind of knock each other around a little bit. And so there was some tension, and on a corner kick, she buried it. And they're like, oh, you make her mad, see what she could do. It's like, well, all right, that's I hate that saying.
I do too.
You know, it's like, why can't she do that all the time then?
Yeah, why
can't
you
just be mad all the time? It's like, you know, when the Hulk, remember in the Avengers movie, and the Hulk was like, you want to know my secret? I'm angry all the time.
I'm angry all the time. Right. Yeah, exactly. If you find your inner motivation.
Yeah.
You don't need, like, for Michael Jordan, he was always like, I took that personally. And he knew most of it was nonsense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it was his own driven thing where he didn't need somebody to do something at that moment. He just always felt that way. Tiger was the same way. Tiger never needed Phil Mickelson to diss him in the press so then he'd go out and shoot 9 under par.
Yeah.
Like you need to be whatever it is that motivates you. It can be anger. It could be a chip on your shoulder. It could just be that you're awesome. Whatever it is, I don't care. But you should never need an outside influence immediately before you bring out the best in yourself.
No, I know. And it's, I mean, I think about Kobe. Kobe always had that, you know, Mamba mentality.
Right.
So he was always ready. He was fired up. He was going to, you know, just drill you. And we've all seen that little video now of what was it, the before the Olympics when he leveled Pau Gasol.
That's right.
And everyone was like, oh, okay, Kobe came to play. We're going to win the gold medal. And it's like, you know, it's like, no, I mean, that's who Kobe was. He didn't care. It was like, you know, there's a finish line. If you're in my way, I got to get to that finish line. And that's, I mean, I think that's what part of the problem is with this U.S. women's team, is that they know where the finish line is. I don't think they know how to get to it, or just haven't found a way to get to it yet. And that could be coaching. I don't know.
Is there a strategic problem? Because there was another part of this article that talked about this prayer circle formation that they use.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow the midfielders to go anywhere with the ball. There's no place to go with it.
I mean, it could be that. It could be the personnel that's on the field. I mean, I talked about it earlier this week. Like, I don't know if Alex Morgan is the right choice. She's the face of the U.S. women's national team. She has been for a couple of years now. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you know, I think we need to move on.
Yeah,
there's better talent, younger talent on the bench that probably can make more noise than she can at this point. But it's almost like, are we putting her in the lineup for sentimental reasons? I don't know.
This game against Sweden could be a bit. I mean, it's not just a big deal because it's win or go home. I get it. I get it. Single elimination. But it could, if they win, it could spark them to win this whole thing again.
Oh, like it could, yes.
You know what I mean?
100%.
It could be that game where they go, if we win this 3-2 or 3-1 or whatever, now we have found the formula. Now we found something in this game that could propel us to win this World Cup again. But Sweden's good, so I'm not optimistic, but only because, you know, But past performance to me equals future results. I mean, you had three games to show us something amazing, and even in a 3-0 win against Vietnam, it wasn't amazing. So, I don't know. Will I get up early to watch it on Sunday? I don't know. I might.
But here's the deal, right? And I don't want to say guys don't watch it live.
Was it 4 a.m. start time for us here in the Central Time Zone?
Is it 4? Yeah, I think it's 4.
5 Eastern, I thought it started.
Yeah. I saw an ad that said 3, but I think that's when the coverage starts.
Gotcha.
At 3. And it's just because, you know, the only reason why they're starting coverage at 3, they don't have anything else.
No. Why would you throw on an hour pregame show?
Yeah. You have people live down in Australia. They're awake. Why not have live programming at that point?
You got all these sponsors. You got to put them somewhere. Put them in the pregame show too. I would do a 2-hour show.
It might be a two hour show because they could be saying 3 Eastern.
Yeah,
it might be a 2-hour show because why not?
Right. What other sport just comes on? Right. Most sports have some sort of warm up part of it. So yeah, get the coverage. So, but yeah, I go back to that thing though, man. I hate seeing it, but. So many people are rooting for them to lose. They don't like the political angle of it. I try to stay out of that stuff. I'm not bashing this team for anything they believe or whatever. It comes every 4 years. I root for the United States. I let all that stuff play itself out. I let other people in other fields of this business do that. I don't go there. It's a sport. They're wearing a United States jersey. They may not appreciate the United States jersey, but to me, they're wearing it. So. So I'm rooting for them. I'm not rooting for them to lose. I can't imagine that. I don't ever want.
I don't think anyone's rooting for them to lose.
Oh, I think people are. Oh yes, I think they are. Oh yes,
the cynics.
Yes. Oh yes. There's a ton of them out there.
That's true.
Look, there's a ton of them that hate this team. They hate this team. They hate for them. They hate them kneeling. They hate them complaining constantly about the United States. Them not respecting the at least if you at least. I made the argument that you live in a country that you can fight for, right? Now, there are countries where you can't fight for what you believe in, right? But you live in a country where you can fight for. That should be the overriding principle of anything. So I understand when people say, I don't like this, and this about the way the United States is. But the United States is not permanent. It has constantly changed in the way we view a lot of things. It's the natural growth, regression, growth again, regression. That's the nature of the democracy that we have created. The people that are in power are the people we put in power. They're not ordained by God. They don't come from royalty. It's not a family dictatorship. It is who we choose. Sometimes we choose this side of the aisle. Sometimes we choose the other side of the aisle. But one thing about this country is you can change it. The moment you reach a point where you feel like I'm not fighting for change, I'm just complaining, that's when people go, I don't get it. I don't have to agree with you. I can at least understand that you want the country to be a different way than me. But what I can't understand is the feeling of defeatism, that this will always be this way. It'll never change. There's nothing we can do about it. So let's complain about it. I hope that I understand why people look at that and go, goodness gracious, you know where you live. But I would never root against them. I would never root against them. Because to me, when you look at them and you say, they don't represent me, and they look at you and say, you don't represent me, it's not a unifying – sport's supposed to be a unifying thing that we can still disagree on politics, but we can come together in sports. That happens in cities every time there's a championship. You can be in a dogfight politically, but you can embrace the celebration of a championship. You can still fight politically and celebrate a championship. And that's what I'm hoping people understand, that all of this pettiness, I understand where people like, ah, man. But at the same time, they're wearing our country's flag. I'm rooting for them. I get why people don't like their politics, but I'm hoping that sports overrides that, at least for this moment, that they're at the World Cup. So there's my rant. We'll go into hour two next. It's Wake Up Call.